That's going to be an interesting one. Welcome. Here I'm sitting with Michael. And we had a lot of great talks the last 10 days. So
yes, thank you for that, man.
Yeah, thank you for that. It's challenging my brain to some degree. So let's give it a try with a podcast setting. And yeah. Let's see if I get more out of you. I'll just go for the standard. Now we have warmed up over the last 10 days, but how would you describe yourself, like your strength in three words or sentences?
Creative, innovative, and disruptive.
And
but that's not my strength. My strength, I'm perseverance.
Perseverance.
Yes. And hardworking, and definitely some sort of inventive, creative, some word like that in that flavor.
Yeah. Okay. And how is that coming? Where do you see that you describe yourself like that?
Well, my mom was an entrepreneur from so from my childhood, I've always been looking at my parents as, my dad was a business salesperson. He was a sales director of a big company, food production company. So even though they were very different, they were very much trying to work their way through in creative ways. My dad's company were making food machines and primarily sold to Iran, actually. So that gave a lot of, you know, diplomatic complications or whatever. Things that were hard, you know. And then, so they had to be creative. And so was my mom, which in turn I took to me as a part of me. And when I was 18 years old, I created my first company. And yeah, I've created 5 companies ever since then. I've sold 3 of them. So, and my solutions are usually very disruptive. I mean, I look at value chains, and many people, when they come up with an invention or a good idea, it's like, okay, so we have this square box, you know, but, you know, the edges, if the edges just were rounded a little bit, then we would have a totally more cooler box because it doesn't make scratches to the edges of the whatever the fuck, right? That's not how I look at it. I look at it differently. So I basically try to take the full value chain of whatever I'm addressing and throw it up in the air and then cut it to pieces. So just removing the need for the box altogether, for instance, by eradicating, you know, logistics, or it could be many things when it's in IT businesses, working with workflows or whatever. But
yes, so it's, yeah, more IT business.
Yeah, it's all IT, what I've been doing, and a fund for, you know, for future farming, I guess. Yeah, yeah. I can do a shout out for it right now. It's it's only addressable by Danish characters. It's called 4xø.org. Yeah, so you wouldn't be able to type it if you heard what I said. Never mind. Yeah.
Only for Danes.
Only for Danes. How to disrupt the world.
Okay, so you grew up with that kind of mindset, basically. Yeah. And to open you up more to our listeners, my favorite question, which gets sometimes really strange answers, is like, you're the new color in a coloring box. What color is that, and why is it that color?
I'm blacker than black.
Blacker than black.
Yes, I'm the total absence of light.
Okay, and yes. Why is that?
Because it can hide everything and anything. It can be anything.
It just makes me think of the early discussion we had today about the black hole.
Yeah, oh yeah. Time dilation. That is a paradox. Yeah, doesn't matter
I mean, we can go into that if you want to, or we see wherever we get in this discussion.
Yeah, I think I would rather talk about other spiritual stuff than just start out with black holes. Also because one of the challenges around black holes is we can only guesstimate. We can only assume things and build up theses and, you know, derive some sort of deduction that comes up with either a solution or an answer, right? But none of it we can validate. And but all we can think about it, looking at Einstein's equation, and just think that if you have something that is an infinitely massive, you know, then there is no room for neither time nor light. And well, there's room for it. There's so much room for it. It's actually a constant, right? So the brightest spot in the universe, in my mind, would be the center of a black hole, if you could and were able to look out, because everything is constant there. So all the light of all the stars of all time arrives at you at the same time. So that's fucking bright.
Yeah. Yeah. And now we have already lost some of the listeners who say, what are we going to talk here about? So let's go. I'm curious because I know you have so many facets. A fun fact or a secret not many people know that know you, right? So it's not the listeners. They probably don't know you.
I write poems to Angelina Jolie.
You write poems to Angelina Jolie?
Yes.
Did you ever send them?
Yeah.
You sent them?
Yeah, and she also read them, I think. I'm quite certain, actually. Yeah.
Awesome. So you're the second person I know is writing to a movie star.
Oh, that's cool. I'm not alone. Yay.
I have a childhood friend who wrote, it must be at least one or two letters to, that was in the 90s or 80s, a child movie. What was the name again? It wasn't Home Alone. So it was like with a girl. Never mind. I don't remember, but
don't remember. Cool.
But he got an answer.
She answered or he answered?
It was a girl. Friend of mine wrote to that girl from a movie. It must have been with Mike Coughlin or what's his name from Home Alone.
Mm. Yeah,
that was a movie with a girl, and he got an answer. That was awesome.
That's pretty awesome.
And she lived in Chicago, so you'll get your answer eventually.
Yeah, I did get an answer from a famous guy once, actually. Two answers along the way. Once I, as a really young kid, wrote a really famous Danish author, and she wrote me back. And that was awesome. Like 5 years later, I had forgotten I had sent the letter. So it was nice that she mentioned some of the contents. In another case, I actually wrote to Lane Staley, who is a dead singer, you know, in the 28 club.
Okay.
27, 28 club. Yeah, anyways, he answered me back as well. Yeah, so that was nice. And with a photo and a signature. Autograph on it, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. What are we talking about today, actually? Now we know your secret about Angelina Jolie and that you're blacker than black and you can hide everywhere. You're creative,
yeah.
Innovative, disruptive.
Yeah, that's true.
And we talked about a lot of spiritual things while we were here.
My favorite topics are food and education.
Food and education?
Yes. I can tell you why it's my favorite topics, for instance. Because if you look at, I mean, we all are in search of a purpose, I guess, right? And the thing is that if you read enough about it, you will eventually end up at a purpose that's just being, right? So all we have to do is to be, right? But the thing is, we're not allowed to be in society today because it's connected with a lot of insecurities. And these insecurities are basically deducible to only five things. So if we could solve these five things, we have better opportunity or equal opportunity for each of us to obtain some sort of enlightenment, which would be awesome. And two of these things are, you know, one of them is food. And education, of course, is one. But that requires us to actually do education. I don't think we do that in society, in schools today. It's like everything's upside down. And I can complain about it for hours. But instead, I would love to just, you know, just spit out a bunch of good ideas for it.
Okay, so how do you think we can educate more? I mean, I also think we're just learning by heart, mostly.
But to start out with, we have to look at what are we educating, you know, the future student to actually accomplish. In the old days, it was like, in the first time of the Illumination, when we started creating schools with bells and everybody had to stand outside and say hi to the teacher and, you know, walk in lines and all these things. Basically, that was just to conform to law because people couldn't read. So if somebody wanted something to happen, you know, like, you're not allowed to do this anymore because, you know, this land is the king's. You know, the land couldn't claim land. The king couldn't claim land if nobody knew it was the king's land. And the reason why, well, then there were hearsay. So you had to have a scroll go into the city of into the center of every city and stand there and yell out the king's new law. Yeah. That doesn't work. We need even the commoners to be able to read. So that's why we started educating everybody. And that was in the beginning. Now we claim ourselves to be civilized, right? But still we educate in topics that people, I mean, they're just... Okay, so we are a variety, right? We are as many people as the ball is round. School today is not designed to support the actual student, but just to basically create a lower level of understanding of the society we are in. Kind of like fashion, and I'll explain that point later. If you want somebody to learn, you have to, I mean, you learn 10,000 times better if you have incitement. But if you don't have incitement, if you're born a dancer, you know, why do you have to learn, you know, something, history or whatever? Math. Yeah, well, math, in my world...
To some degree.
Yeah, to some degree, math is quite important, but everything above trigonometry, that's like stupid. That's just a waste of time. They're never going to use it, and they don't even use it practically for problem solving in the future. But you still, in order for you to get out of high school, you have to learn second degree equations. Yeah, you need basically a lot of time for learning something you don't need. So math to a certain degree, but then everything by excitement. But the main thing is, when you have the incitement, you're still not able to learn. Because, I mean, you go to school for 25 years and you learn all these things only for the purpose of an exam. So you're basically making a highway to forgetfulness instead of... if you do it on incitement, people learn what they're interested in learning. And the way we do it is we have 2 hours of German on Wednesday and 2 hours of German on Thursday and 1 hour on the Friday. So we have 5 hours in seventh grade or something, right? And that accumulates to, in Denmark at least, for all the hours of us being taught German as a language, as a secondary language, that totals maybe like 3,000 hours, maybe 5 if you get it on a higher level, like college as well. And that's just bullshit. I mean, I can learn the most complex stuff in that many hours if I had incitement, but we don't have incitement. I went to Spain as an adult, had 2 hours of school every day and a conversation hour at night. I had the incitement to actually learn the language because I was living in Catalan land. who didn't want to speak English. So if I wanted to say hi to the girls, I had to speak Spanish, right? So I had the incitement. After 3 months, I was fluent in Spanish, right? That's less than 500 hours. And I speak Spanish and read complex books in Spanish based on, you know, a three-month education very intensely. So let's say that you're in my perfect school, there are only two subjects. There is basically, well, maybe three. Math, your own language, and some sort of a sports, right? Because we need to keep you fit. That is just like really important, and we don't do that. And that's, yeah, that's another thing. So if, everything else by that is subjects of choice. And if you choose a subject, it should be compromised into like a module. Like 3 months, you're going to have this, but you're going to have it full time and really digging into it. Also, why is it that the only thing that binds you and your classmates in common is your birthday? I mean, that's just stupid, because people are on different levels in all sorts of things, both in maturity, but also within a specific subject. And when we have like 30 kids going into a classroom learning something, the teacher has to explain it on an average level. So instead, and the problem is also that we have a teacher. Yeah, so let's just imagine that you had study groups that was not bound by your date of birth. The study groups were very intense. Your only exam in the topic that you're studying is that after half the period of the subject you're studying is over, you're not basically studying it anymore. You're actually teaching it. You're actually teaching the subject instead to the newcomers, because
also so you basically become like a teacher.
Yeah, exactly, because that's when you learn the most. That is when you are able to explain something.
You actually also learn to express yourself.
Yeah,
through that.
And there is a lot of epiphany related to questions coming from the pupils that, oh, okay, oh, this must be why, and that is the reason for this, and so forth. So there's many good things to be drawn from a setting like that.
Okay, that's interesting. I mean, my daughter is now in free school, mm-hmm. free school in school, and of course in Denmark free school is not the same from city to city. It's they have the same allowance, but and they have to learn the same stuff, but how they learn varies.
Yeah,
and because of not because of corona, before already they suddenly had luckily more pupils, so now my daughter is in three age groups. So they're like third, fourth, and fifth class together, which is, she likes it, because exactly what you say, and that's not like that one person is better in all the topics. It's just like, you might be really good in sports, but not so good in the language you learn, and mediocre in the math, right? So you would level it out, and you would get into different groups.
Yeah,
That kind of makes sense.
It totally makes sense.
But I would also... Personally, I would add some creativity work, because I
think... Oh, yeah, but the topics are all wrong. Because then, but that's just a natural evolution in my mind. Because when we get this going, people will have the ability to choose all these different things, not confined to whatever pensum, you know, the actual, you know, country or school requires of you to read. But things like, I mean, just to mention a handful of things, like... vibrationals and harmonics. We need sound healing in school. We need to understand vibration. We don't understand vibration today. We need to meditate. And it should be guided meditations. And this is also a thing that would be perfectly combined with learning multiple languages. Because imagine a school offering meditations for students daily. In different languages, but it's the same meditation. So people will, you know, get in tune in a different way. And also the thing is that we are also bound by schedules. So if I'm if I have chosen my favorite subject, green thinkers that everybody should be taught to make my own fucking food, how to survive, right? But I'm not in the mood today. I slept like shit and, you know, I'm tired and, you know, I didn't get breakfast and I pissed my pants, whatever. Then I might not be in the mood for that actual hour. So then I can just do something else. I mean, there's a bus going to the, not the beach, but out swimming and something, right? There's just the possibility to just drop in a class, basically.
Okay, yeah, it's from where we are now, it's of course difficult to visualize, and there's of course some things which have to be different, because there's kids which will not go to school at all.
Yeah.
But of course they might learn something else, but I definitely see the concept a bit here, and you mentioned already what is missing is meditation or mindfulness.
Yeah.
Definitely. And another thing, which we had biology in school, but did we really make our hands dirty?
No, we didn't
get grounded. I mean, you know, if for people which are not in the meditative world and think grounding is a weird word, grounding basically just means you get your hands dirty with earth, right?
Yeah.
You touch the earth.
Yeah, transfer those electrons.
Yes, because we have, through stress, through exposure, through thinking, through whatever we eat, move, we are charging ourselves negative or positive.
Yes.
And the planet has a certain charge, and it's a huge planet, so it can
can heal our bodies. But when we constantly walk around with plastic isolation at our souls, not being able to touch the
earth. On rubber ground.
Yeah, rubber ground, as we speak, right? Hands in the dirt is just a great, great, great solution.
Yes, and then and actually I think, you know, the green thinking you say is actually taking biology and actually apply it in the school.
Yeah.
And that's why I liked also with the Freeschule.
Yeah.
Because they're going out and looking things, right?
Yeah.
Have a little spice garden. So actually to see how is something growing? How do you harvest it? How do you get it to be eaten? And, and we're really lacking these things, because we are more pushing the people into making them kind of like robots. And I can understand when I listen to you now, listening to also Tim Ferriss and other podcasters, which say, he doesn't say don't go to make a college or whatever, but there are some people, they drop out of school at 18, they have a very successful life, because the way they learn is better supported outside school.
Yeah.
But there's also the others, they finish school at 28, 30, and they have a successful life, because that's where they're really passionate.
That's actually one of my most important points about education. Because one thing is that, you know, we all learn in different ways, so we need to do stuff educational-wise.
Or different topics.
Yeah, also that, but that's incitement, because you would never choose a topic you wouldn't be able to learn, right? but the most important thing in that regard is actually, we go to school like 25 years. Yeah, so if you look at, I mean, the most important point was actually that we go to school for like 25 years, many of us, some even more, some less, for sure. But the thing is that we go to school just to learn all this stuff for the exams, and then we forget it, right? That forgetfulness part, that's key. We have never been educated in a tool on how to remember. That should be basically one of the topics that is mandatory from class 0 to class 5.
Actually, you make me think. I took Mind Valley classes with Jim Quick, and he had like this brain damage.
Yeah, he's smart.
So you know Jim Quick.
Yeah.
But he wasn't. He struggled up to being 20, 25, right? And then he started. And what he's teaching, it's exactly what he said. This is actually the first thing you should learn at school.
Yeah.
How to remember things, how to learn, because we do not know what we need in 10 years.
No.
So and I've heard that so many times, like, you go to school, we teach you something we are pretty sure you do not need anymore, because the life changes so fast.
But that's because we have misunderstood the purpose of schooling. Because we are educating people in a world where, for the purpose of us going out and getting a job, right? But that's not what we need in the future. what we need is a, I mean, of course, the rich would want us, the poor, to have all sorts of problems, because then the rich can solve them for us, for money, right? But that's not what we want. We want to be educated to be better human beings.
Yes.
We need to learn how to thrive. I mean, if I ask my kid, my oldest is 21, he's a beautiful kid, his name is Magnus. And when I ask him, he's knowledgeable about all these things. But then I push his buttons and he reacts like a 3 years old, right? He has no understanding of his own emotional mindset, or, you know, why he triggers this and that, or what kind of perspective there's available to him in 30 years. If we kind of help kids thriving, you know, that would be...
Wow, a big how powerful.
Thing. Yeah, so let's try to... in schools to educate the individual to become the best individual that person possibly could be, instead of, no, we educate you because we need you as a useless worker in 10 years 15 years,
right? Like what I heard, Amazon has, like, they have arm wrists which have like the short, how do you call it, like abbreviations for whatever, security,
yeah,
and the letters it creates is robot.
So
they go, they have this thing around their wrist which is measuring what they're doing with the security things, so that they're not getting damaged, injured, or whatever it is, or the product, and they know exactly how long they're on the bathroom, everything, and it's even written robot on them.
Yeah, that's scary.
It's very scary, because isn't it subconsciously programming, and we are capable of so more. I mean, we had talks about, you know, all these spiritual things. And I think it was very hard for me to accept my spiritual part. And I'm not spiritual by all means. My friends always listen to that. Don't come to me and say, you're not spiritual. I'm on my spiritual path, but I'm not spiritual yet. I know that, because I have so many things to learn. Exactly what you say, the triggers. What is triggering feelings? What feelings do I not allow? You know, the shadow work, like, yeah, you know, being jealous about other things, or being really angry when someone says something. And I totally agree. We need to learn it early on. But at the moment, this is the task of parents, because 99% of the schools don't do it. I'm sure there's some schools and some teachers doing great jobs. I've seen that. But there are just too few of them.
Yeah. True.
And yeah, learn to learn and learn to know who you are.
Yeah.
Listen to your feelings.
Learn to remember. Learn from your mistakes. How to learn from your mistakes.
Yeah, don't get angry with the mistakes. And that's the school system, just helps you with the grades. If I make mistakes, I have a bad grade, so I should not make mistakes. But all the big entrepreneurs, they say the mistakes were the things that taught me how to get to this solution.
I mean, it's, you don't even have to be smart to understand that. Because if you just look at average science around time... you know, all the inventions that changed the world was pointing out mistakes in the flawed mindset of the previous year, right? I mean, the Earth is flat. No, it's round. You know, oh, no, it's round? What? You know? So,
yeah, and
it's okay to make those mistakes, because in the mistakes, that's where you're going to find the golden spot, the sweet spots, right?
Yeah, and, you know, Edison, we can... recall Edison's 9,999, whatever mistakes or trials he had to get to his light bulb. So if we are in this education thing here,
yeah.
Of course, I started a podcast around creativity. So how would you describe, and you also took creativity as part of your disruption, how would you describe creativity in your words? Not from the book.
Well, creativity is art. Then what is art? Art is everything that was left unfinished, I guess.
Okay.
I don't know. Creativity is just an outlet. You can be a creative person in many ways. I mean, you can create by drawing or music or... you know, but I also think it's creative just to sit down and shut up. That's pretty creative. I mean, that's just challenging your own mind to listen, right? And that creates creativity. And the more you create, the more creative you get, you know. Yeah. The more you create, the more able you are to create new things again. So,
yeah, but as an IT guy, have you been creative on your IT projects?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's not
very creative. It's writing books, right? It's writing algorithms. It has to be. Of course, the overall idea can be creative, and you can also have creative architecture. But you know, you can't be creative in writing. Yeah, of course you can do that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there we go.
It is creative. It's so in some ways.
Everything can be creative. Yeah. It's just
something.
My feeling is more like you're creative when you put things together which are new for you.
Yeah.
Because I had enough of quoting and relaying back, this person said this and that person said that. If it's new for you, I think it's creative because you use new pathways in your brain or whatever, or your energy, you're drawing information and put them together, which is new for you. I think that's creative.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Anything else then going in radical innovation or whatever, right? So you also said innovative. So what is the contrast to innovation with creativity for you?
I mean, first off, we all lose creativity from the day we're born till the day we die. It's just that one downhill slope, right? I would love to have a full Olympics in creativity. That would be beautiful. The day, if we ever get that, you know, we have aliens landing and saying, yay, mission accomplished, you did it, you know. All of your planet's monkeys meet up and are creative in a friendly battle of kung fu or whatever, right? And when I'm innovative, it's basically just spotting. I mean, one of the reasons why I had a hard time throughout my life was that I spot problems. I'm a problem solver by mind. So most of the things I focus on is problems, which also gives me manifestation issues. But nonetheless, I think I passed that now. So if you have a problem, an innovative solution was to think of it not as a problem, but as an advantage, and just get the most benefit out of whatever it is that's the issue. It's kind of like thinking of it as, you know, our kid, they were educated to think there, you know, to any problem there is 10,000 solutions or whatever, right? Well, there is no, maybe just to any problem there is a solution, right? And then, you know, a generation later it was like, well, you have to think out of the box. Think out of the box, you know. And then, you know, maybe my generation and your generation came up with the idea that, no, fuck the box. Let's find ways to destroy the box instead, you know. And then our kids, I think now, comes up with the notion that, what box? There is no box. The box was never there. So it's just like looking at problems from different angles. And much of the value chain around most things are just, you know, one big capitalistic, materialistic bullshit engine that just tries to fuck us all over. And it's working, right?
Hey, we see it now.
Yeah. But let's try to look at those value chains. And the most profound thing you can do as a human being and you as a listener is definitely, if you want to disrupt the world and change something, you know, if you want to really make a difference, make your own food. I mean, just put seeds in the ground and harvest them. That is the most disruptive thing you can do, and also the most innovative thing you can do, because you change a value, a key value chain from being super ugly to being super beautiful. There's a short way from your garden to the kitchen table, whereas, you know, there is packaging, there's transport, there's, you know, all this big farming,
gases.
There's all these other problems related to food you purchase in a supermarket. So if you really want to change stuff, make food. Yeah.
I mean, for some people, it could be just eat food that was grown.
That's true. Yeah. Or paleo food is the next step, right? Only buy food from your own country or your local environment, you know?
Unseasonal. And
yeah. If you live in a state, buy state food, you know? If you live in a small country like Denmark, buy food with a Danish flag on it. Because there's little transport, there's little storage, there's little, you know... Of course, there's lots of chemicals, but there's less chemicals. There's no, you know, huge ships. And that's another thing. Okay. So our planet, what the fuck is up? I mean, I know that Hindenburg burned. But why are we transporting everything by ship? It does not make sense. Also, you know what it costs to bring 10,000 tons of material from one continent to the next? If you do it optimally on a Zeppelin, it costs the energy of a AA battery, right? All you have to do is use tiny propellers to lift it to a certain level, then wind takes care of itself. Transport it across the Atlantic, then you lower it again. And they have incredibly much tonnage. Whereas today we sail around huge tankers and dump oil in the ocean, and then there's a storm and we lose those 500 containers with...
The Zeppelin can also end up in a storm, right?
No, because it flies in a higher level.
It flies in a higher
level? Yeah, it's the only thing it looks at is it's not going east or west or north or south or, you know, even having a rotor that can be manageable. It just goes to the right layer of our planet's atmosphere. And then it's dragged wherever it needs to go. Yeah. And we have stable gases today. Back then, they used flammables, which is, you know, obviously a dumb thing, right?
But it makes for good CD covers, LP covers.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but besides that, it's not really... It was one of the most sad things that happened to human innovation, because Zeppelin technology is super innovative.
Let's see if it comes back. I think I've seen some.
Yeah, I've seen Germany try as well.
But exactly, Germany try this again.
Yeah, but and they might succeed because it is the it is a very, in my mind, a very plausible technology of future, because it wouldn't change anything. People say, oh, but then, you know, then I can't have my Nike shoes on the Wednesday. No, but all you need to do is have better logistics. And basically, in the future, I don't think we need to send Nike shoes from A to C. We ship materials for 3D printing and copyright energy stamps through the internet. So all you have to do is just fill your 3D printer with the right type of polymer, and then you can print whatever.
But then we are walking again on rubber shoes and are not grounded.
That's true. I walk bare feet. That is definitely... not a secret, but maybe a secret to all of them out there.
Yeah, I mean, I walk barefoot as much as I can. Yeah. I don't like barefoot in the city, so...
I've done that a few times because I don't leave my island that much, but the few times I do visit Copenhagen, I do that, and people stare at you like you're a fucking hillbilly. It's hilarious.
Yeah, that comes when you think a bit different, right?
Yeah, that's true.
I had, when we get down that road, I had a discussion with my stepfather, and he said he can see when he was younger, right now he's in his 60s, when he was younger there were so many more people which were looking different. Now you go down the city and everyone looks kind of the same.
That was my point from earlier. Do you know why that is? Okay, so if you have a normal distribution curve, you know, that kind of curve, right?
Yeah.
Normal distribution. The thing in the middle is called the median, right? 10% and 10% on both sides, that's called the mode.
Okay.
And that is the Latin word for fashion.
Ah, okay. Now so, we get to fashion.
Yeah, so so it's basically what you're actually mentioning and noticing is the definition of fashion. It's actually right there in the middle where everybody wants it. Yeah.
So just make it more than 10%.
Yeah, but that's the math part about it. Yeah. It's a little to each side, but the thing is, 25% all in total. But nonetheless, the thing is that this is just averaging everything. We're not looking for the outliers. Today, if you have an outlier, smart or stupid, you know,
beautiful or ugly.
Yeah, we try to push them into the middle. Both of them, right? But then that's not what we should be doing. We should really be emphasizing on strengthening the outliers.
That's also the book I read for my master thesis from a Danish forfather author criticizing the Jantelo.
Yeah.
And I think the Jantelo is misunderstood in Denmark and generally anyway. Everyone has to be the same. Exactly what you criticize. Everyone has to start the same. So you have to be in the same year in school. You have to learn the same. You get the same information to learn it. For some, it's too much. For some, it's boring. Right? And the ones which are bored are doing stupid things. I have seen that.
Yeah.
the most intelligent people make the most stupid things because they're bored.
Yeah. And lazy. And that's an
Yeah, they get
advantage.
Lazy because...
And that's an advantage because then you... don't want to do this tedious fact. How to fuck it up.
Oh yeah, but then we go on another thing. Yeah. If you want to have innovation done, give it to the most lazy person. We'll find out the laziest way to get things done.
Yeah.
Then it's the most innovative, easiest, cheapest way.
Just cut off 75%. And then those 25, that's the essence. Because that's all I need to do to actually complete the process.
Yeah. But now I lost my thought of train of thought. Okay, so we had a short break. And we are back. And we are going more into the creative problem solving with Mikael. Yay. On, an obstacle. Something really hard to overcome. If you have any stories about something and how you overcame that situation.
Yeah, I have three stories coming to mind.
You can share all three, up to you.
Okay, I will. I'll make the first one brief. That's a spiritual thing that I didn't solve. I think it was solved for me. When I was 5 years old, I had a younger sibling. His name was, he was born and baptized Christian because he died of meningitis. And usually newborns don't die of meningitis. It's dangerous, but they don't die from it. And when I was 14, I got meningitis and I survived. Obviously, right? Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. But the thing is that when you're that old, you normally don't survive. So I kind of think that that's a spiritual thing. That was a spiritual obstacle my little brother solved for me.
He took it for you?
Yeah, he took it for me for some weird reason.
Is it like is he kind of like a guard or guide for you?
For now, yeah. Today I consider him a guardian angel. Yeah. Things concretely about my life. I was a very energetic kid. Really, really bright. So bright that I made obstacles for myself. I kind of decided involuntarily to have OCD. And I suffered from OCD for a long time. And then I just one day decided, I don't want to be fucking OCD anymore. I want to be able to step on the lines. I don't want to touch the handle a certain number of times or do all these things. So I decided I want to solve my problem in a healthy way for me. So I'm allowed to be OCD about certain things, but not those things that doesn't really matter. So I got OCD about picking up batteries. So if I walk past a battery, I had to pick it up. And it was my excuse because I genuinely thought if I didn't touch the handle 3 times and all these things, if I didn't do my life right, doing exactly the things that my OCD demanded of me, the world would end. And when I decided on all these other things, I was going through life really scared. Until the first time I found that battery, picked it up and realized, yay, the world hadn't ended. I've been doing, you know, nothing. Only picking up this battery. That was my OCD. And that's how I overcame OCD.
Yeah, so it's not something which is fixed. You can overcome it by...
I just decided I was allowed to be OCD about certain things.
Yeah.
And I made sure that those things were aligned with some of my actual hobbies. You know, I pick up feathers as well.
I've seen.
Yeah. I do that, you know, and I consider it as gesture towards angels, you know, because it helps me because I'm not OCD anymore, which is awesome.
Yeah, so many of these mental labels we have, we put on ourselves somewhat.
Yeah.
It's like my ADHD. I used it as a, you know, keep away from me, I have ADHD. But that's now, what is it, 5 years, 4.5 years ago. It was more a problem for me because of getting depressed and stressed by thinking different.
Yeah.
So now I look at it, it's like being an African or Icelandic or Italian or Turkish or Swiss or whatever you are, right? It's just the brain which works a bit different. And therefore you have to have your own lifestyle, right? So if I live like all the others, then I make it difficult for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And OCD, I don't know how that works, but it seems like you found a way to channel that energy in your brain to something more useful.
Yeah.
And liberate the rest of it for... Yeah, I mean, that's a child game. It now is, we only walk on the line of the Fliese, stone door, exactly. Only on the black tiles. And
yeah, but the thing was that to this day, I'm still OCD, right? And for sure it is, I don't know. I mean, I have friends like Sina, who knows more about psychology about these things, but... Yeah,
it's not hindering you anymore.
No, it's not a hindrance. But I still feel the pressure, you know. So, for instance, if I don't pick up the feather, because sometimes you don't have time or you're walking and talking and then, you know, it's just staying with me for a long time. You didn't pick up the feather. Be careful, you know. The meteor will hit. You know, God will punish us. You know, you didn't do it right, Michael.
Okay.
So it's still there, but because I've chosen something that actually eventually worked and it's not that often, it's also somewhat easier.
Okay, yeah. It's not like, as you said, the doorknob.
Yeah, yeah.
That one you touch every day several times.
Yeah, and that's just insane, right?
Yeah. You talked about the third one.
Yes. Oh yeah, and that's just a. I was depressed at some point, and depression hits hard, and it's dark, and you know all you want to do is shrivel up and lay in a foster position, and you know play an egg for a year or two,
or eternity.
Yeah, or eternity, and that's just super destructive because then you have all this stupid time with yourself, and if you're not smart enough—not smart—that's not the right word. If you're not at peace enough with yourself, then you start building stories, and those stories just prevail, and you build and you build, and then you create a delusional world, and which is really unhealthy. For first of all, it is not true, and second of all, it's not supporting who you really are. So I was super depressed, and I realized after a few months that this was actually important. I mean, I was severely depressed, and I didn't want to do the egg thing because that's a fucking waste of time and you don't get anywhere with it. So I decided to move to another culture, Spain. And I decided that I was allowed to think as much about the things I was depressed about, but not in my own language, only in Spanish. And because I had a limited vocabulary, I simply couldn't have interesting conversations with myself about it. So I just stopped, and eventually I just became happy, just because I wasn't able to think about it.
And that was only just, had hola, cómo estás.
Yeah, but in the beginning, the first few days, but after 3 months, I was quite proficient. But still, there's so many specific terms that is not within the first 10,000 words of a language. So I wasn't able to have interesting conversations with myself. So it just stopped. It just became silent. And that was awesome. And the second.
So what was the depression then? If it just
heartbreak.
No, but you said it just stopped because you didn't have the self conversation. So what stopped? Yourself,
yeah,
or
my own conversations about the topic. So I just began being.
So you began being, and then you said there was a second part, sorry.
Yeah, because once in a while I actually had the ability to describe whatever, right, within my limited language capability. So so I had this thought that it's also so stupid me thinking all these destructive things, because basically the only person in this whole world that I trust, including my family, that's me. And when I say bitchy things about myself in the voice of me, then I believe it. And that I didn't want. So I made my inner voice, each time I had this negative thought, I repeated it inside my own mind as Donald Duck or somebody I found, you know, being a ridiculous person. And then I stopped believing it. So I used that as well. So the combination of those two things made me come out of a severe depression quite fast, actually.
That's actually, I mean, for the listeners, if you only take that part out of it, that's first class teaching. And that's probably also something as we had before, schooling, right?
Yeah.
It's lining there, because we do not learn at school or from our parents, which did not learn from school, which did not have these things, right?
Yeah.
There's, of course, parents which are aware of that and are very good in teaching their kids, but they are too few. It's so important to not listen to your own voice, going to Eckhart Tolle and who knows what. I just know him. I know there's others talking about the same as well, so...
Yeah.
That's my ignorance, sorry people, but I just know Eckhart Tolle talking to himself, saying, you're so stupid, saying, yeah, but why do I say you? It's me, so who is you, right? And that's when he realized the duality of the mind.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And you just said, okay, that duality, which the ego, I mean, let's... put it there. It's the ego which talks back to you because it wants to keep you where you are. It's comfortable there.
Yeah, and that's the Yandelov that we spoke about, that you mentioned earlier, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think the original Yandelov, was that not like, treat everyone equal by being different? I had the feeling it was something there, but...
Yeah, I mean, there was like 50 rules of the Yandelov. and the story is hilarious. But if you look at... I mean, in Denmark, it's described as the root of all evil, you know, why society is like that. but me as an entrepreneur, I see it from a different perspective, because fuck Yandelong. I mean, all entrepreneurs have to do that. They just have to say fuck Yandelong. And then if somebody does something, Yandelov's acted like, yeah, you're not allowed to be more than me.
Yeah.
It's like, see my ass, I'm leaving, you know, I don't need you.
You're not allowed to be different. You're not allowed to be special.
Yeah, but you can always, as an entrepreneur, you are strong enough just to turn your back and leave, you know. So that's not the problem. The problem is actually anti-Yande. The problem is that the media, you know, quote, the median, you know, so the media just levels for the average, right? So And one of the important parts in actually doing that is making superheroes out of people that has absolutely nothing to contribute other than being super dumb and hilarious. So everybody can laugh at them. Oh, look what this girl did. Oh, and then, oh, he was drunk and this disco again. And
oh my God, don't tell me. Oh, I told you in the break or before that I have like two times the advent calendar. Some people which do not know that, Christmas calendar. Twice, 24 episodes, 19 and 20. And in 2020, Denmark had the most stupid Christmas calendar.
Yeah.
They were getting fucking drunk, or I don't know, stupid drunk. Danes think hilariously drunk on tasting beer, I think.
Yeah.
Wasn't it beer and other alcohols?
Yeah.
24 different ones. And they just did it in one go. And taped everything.
That's actually hilarious.
It is hilarious, but it's also so...
Yeah, it's dumb.
It's really dumb. There's no value in that.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other movie, I haven't seen it, Drunk.
Yeah.
With the best five actors. Yeah, they just got like an
Oscar or something.
Did they get an Oscar for it?
Yeah, they got that whatever... They won, anyways. I don't know when, but it wasn't the Oscars, was it?
Emmy or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, first, whatever. Right? They fucking won. And that's just...
Wasn't it in one go they just got drunk and that is the film?
Yeah, but it's just sad because it's actually ancient. Let's make them people who are stupid and contributing nothing to our icons and idols and heroes and, you know, the people we should be looking up to and all the tabloid stories are about them. Instead of looking at, you know, the brightest of the bright and, you know, those that really, you know, having their hands dirty, we don't even give them any hang time.
Yeah, we have a few of those. Like, there's, what's his name? The comedian, Robin Williams.
Robbie Williams, yeah.
Yeah, he was super intelligent.
Yeah.
And also funny.
Yeah, he was hilarious, yeah.
So, I mean, there's definitely a lot of those around, but on the other hand, I have to say it's also creative that they did that with drunk, but I just think it's, you know, being in a society where it's just so normal to just, you know, have 2, 3, 4 beers every day, I think that's a bit sad.
Yeah, it is.
Because going back to get your hands dirty, put the seat in the ground.
Yeah.
Make your own food.
And alcohol is actually an Arabian word for spirit eating.
Really?
Yeah.
Let's go down that road. I love all these spiritual talks we had and these mystical talks.
Yeah.
What do you know about that?
Oh, that's an open question. I only know a very little.
Okay. Yeah, but still, just like, you know.
Compared to the rest of humanity right now, I probably know a handful. But the thing is that we don't know that much. For instance, one of my heroes is Hermes Trismegistus. Which is basically his name, Hermes, has a lot of meaning. I won't dig into that. But Trismegistus, I'll dig into that one. It's Trimaster. So his name is Hermes Trimaster. And he wrote that. We have proof. That's insane, and we don't talk about it. Why is that not part of school? Anyways, because I need a kid to actually solve it for us. We have this, we found Hermes' tomb some years ago, 30, 40 years ago. And in that tomb, there was an emerald tablet. One big crystal with written letters on it. First off, we don't even know how they made that kind of art or creativity. How the fuck did they do that? Mind melting or what? I mean, it's a crystal and it's a huge as a table and it's got written all these stuff on it.
Wow.
It's called the Emerald Tablet. And the Emerald Tablet was translated, you know, like by... Oh, I keep forgetting who translated it in the common version. But if you look up on Wikipedia, it's like Newton. I think it's Newton, actually. So the translation we have of the Emerald Tablet today is made by Newton.
Yeah, but Newton is not 40 years ago.
No, that's, yeah. But then disregard the first. it's not Newton then. It probably is Newton. But then it's found in the 1600s or 1700s. I can't remember. It's old. It is, of course it's that old. So disregard my first. It is found like in the 1600s or something.
Yeah, we'll find out. Yeah, we put the Wikipedia.
Yeah, link it. Because it's an interesting story. And it's basically one of the first things that should be triggering our minds. Because it was found before we actually had all these super rich people buying up arts and artifacts around the world. And
yeah, so we're never going to see it.
Right? Yeah, exactly. But this one we actually got to saw. And it is profound. And if you read the translation made by Newton, you will see that that's mystics. I mean, he's talking about magic, you know. And, you know, many of the phrases that we walk around using today is from that tablet, from the Emerald Tablet that we have found. As above, so below, for instance. That's the last line of the Emerald Tablet. So legend is that if you have the Emerald Tablets, you have solved the problems and the questions about the universe and everything. You can also change matter, and you are the master. You can change the stars, you can move around the stars and the sky and stuff. And I can tell you a really good Egyptian fairy tale about the Emerald Tablets.
So it's from Egypt.
It is from Mesopotamia.
So before Egypt.
Yeah, before it was Egypt. But one of the things we also found was that the Emerald Tablet is only one page out of several.
Page.
Page. Like a 50 kilo page, you know, worth.
Okay, let's have Tolkien's Lord of the Rings.
I think there's only like 6 pages. But the thing was, some of those pages are legend, a myth tells that they were supposed to be buried under the Sphinx. And there's all that conspiracy theory about the Sphinx been opened and closed and forgotten. You know, Nobody got to see what was found in there. If there were pages to the Emerald Tablet, I mean, I certainly hope they landed in the right hands, because I do believe that the legends are true, that you can do actual magic when you understand the tablets.
Are you trying to mount it? Yeah.
So the Emerald Tablets, there are these many pages, and the story about them was that this one magi was buried with them in the desert in some sort of pyramid, and they are said to control life and death, the placement of the stars, the secret of the heavens, the secret of earth, and a few other things. I can't remember the last parts. In relation to all these things, the really interesting story we found in the world's oldest book, even older than, well, we don't know whether it's older than the Emerald Tablet, but we have the Rosetta Stone that really solved a big problem for us, because it has these three same text in these three languages. One of them forgotten, which was Sanskrit. We didn't know how to read Sanskrit. We just thought it was, you know, jimbo jumbo, but, you know, then we realized it's an actual language, and then we got access to all these things because all these old monuments and buildings had these signs on them, and we didn't understand them, but now we did. So now we have the old stories. Amongst other things, we got access to the Osiris scroll, which is another stone, to be said to be the world's oldest story or book. And that includes the legend of Gilgamesh. And if you look upon all the things I could, you know, describe about all these things, spirituality, I basically got from that point of view, from
Gilgamesh.
From Gilgamesh, the legend of Gilgamesh and the Osiris scroll, which was basically also describing a Book of the Dead, you know, when that is the first paper book we have, you know, not the Bible, it's the Book of the Dead, that all Egyptian wealthy people carried with them to the tomb to help them as a passport to a lucky afterlife. Because you have these 42 rules of Maat that you must master, kind of like the 10 rules of Moses.
Commandments.
Yeah, the 10 commandments. But in the old days, there was 42. And it's called the Book of Maat. And none of the rich people could, you know, survive a challenge on those 42 rules. So, but if they paid the priests in life, they could get this super passport, which is called the Book of the Dead. So this is the book we have the most old examples of, because it's found in every tomb we ever find that's Egyptian or Mesopotamian. Yeah.
Okay, so the Egyptian took a lot of Mesopotamia.
Yeah,
and mythicism.
Yeah, well, basically, Egypt. In Egypt, there was a city called Uruk. Or was it Iran, or was it Iraq? Who knows? But it was the capital of all of that area back then. And that is including all of Africa, you know, and way up all the way towards Russia and deep into India. So this was, you know, the biggest empire of the world back then, ruled by Gilgamesh, the last god on Earth. Yeah. Huh. That was when planet Earth had a capital, and that was Uruk. Yeah. I think Uruk is close to the Euphrates, and the Euphrates is in Egypt.
Okay. Yeah. But did we find Uruk?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we know where it is. Where it was. Yeah. So,
did we also find like some parts of the city? Because I remember seeing some kind of ancient history where they found huge walls and everything. But it was destroyed.
Yeah, yeah.
By an atom or bomb. Was that the city or?
It could have been. I mean, we don't have. But we have found it, yes. But it's not a city. It was leveled.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is sad because it was the capital of the planet. And the descriptions of it is quite beautiful in the legends of Gilgamesh. And when you read the legend of Gilgamesh, me as a Viking, at least, I see the exact storyline going on in my belief or in my religion, which is called Asatru, or, you know, the Asgardian belief, right?
Yeah, we believe Odin.
In Odin and Thor and Freya and Frigg and, you know, Baldur and all these.
Yeah, we could have another interview on
just on that. That alone, that's hilarious. That's good stories. That's why I love to read them that much. But the similarities are just profound. I mean, even the beasts of the old Mesopotamian myth is relatable to the old religion of the Nordics, right? And that's just crazy.
That makes me think, I don't know, we probably won't have time really to go down that road, but I mean, I bought in one of the shops a book about those beliefs, just to learn it myself, being in Denmark. As a Swiss, we of course learned the Catholic, not the Catholic, but the Christian beliefs. I am not Catholic, I'm Protestant, but anyway, it's same, different shoe. And I came up here, got that one. So I don't remember if it was in there or it was another story I just got into my hand from the library where the Vikings actually were like the Swiss guard in the room for the Pope. There were the Vikings were sought after exactly in that region to protect. I don't know if it was the king or whatever.
We were private armies.
Yeah, like we soldiers
were,
there, and then
we were up for hire.
So, did they take some of the beliefs back home to Scandinavia and then integrated it in their
thing? I think they did, but I think it's much older. I think we have to look like 50,000 years before that. actually happening. Because I do believe that it's the same story, but it's, and it's, though they're described differently, it's the same story because they have the same source.
Yeah, and then just by telling, it changes, exactly. Right?
Just imagine that before the deluge, you know, 10,000 years ago, all of planet Earth was covered by a flood, right? Before that, let's just say 50,000 years or 300,000 years ago, Earth got crushed again, this time for a different reason. And if we were able to talk back then, and I think we were, I think we've been able to do that for millions of years, but at least 1 million years, 3 million maybe, people would move
around the world.
Yeah, around the world, but they would carry the same god names. So Odin is basically Enki, for instance.
Or Gandalf, I heard from
that's a whole podcast in itself, just tracing back backwards, and sometimes I get the timelines flawed, so I would need to prepare to actually say what I believe, but I think that in the old days the gods walked the planet, so we knew their names. Then something happened and everything was dispersed, and then we, you know, assimilated their names based on the geographics we actually lived in during, you know, hundreds of thousands of years. In the beginning, we didn't write much. I mean, looking at caves around the planet, which is super interesting as well, there's only like 100 different pictograms. And, you know, yeah, how can that be?
Yeah. So we are...
Yeah, so let's be closing up.
So we are closing up. I had so many mystical interviews, also Kete Hosen, and I... We had some other connections while we were here, which is crazy. I mean, I really want to see, like, having like a group talk with you guys of people, because you share similar things. But until then, dear listeners, and you know who you are. Are you reachable if someone says, hey, I want to chat to this crazy guy, this Archangel Michael, but that's a complete different story there.
Yeah, that's another story. I have a website, and I have many websites, but I have a blog, with my last name, TOUDAL.com.
Okay, and the website, that's the blog, and that's where they reach it. Super. Everything is going to be in the show notes. We'll try to find links to the different things. I mean, we cannot bring anything from the schools, from this mystical...
Yeah, we can definitely...
Teachings, we'll put some...
A few things, yeah.
Put some show notes. And with that, I thank you very much, Michael, for another insightful talk, at least for me.
Yeah.
And I should have some more time to take more episodes.
We do it next time.
Yeah. Until then, see you.
See ya.
Hello again, here at the end of the show. I hope you really enjoyed this interview I had today with my guest. And if you do so, please go, if you have not done that already, and subscribe to my podcast on whatever platform you are listening to. Put some star ratings or thumbs up or whatever you can, hearts I've seen somewhere, and leave a review, a comment about the episode. And if you have some direct messages for me, you can also do that directly on anchor.fm/Schirach, S-C-H-I-R-A-C-H, as in the form of a voice message. You can also send me an email on oschirach, like for Oliver Schirach, oschirach in one word, at gmail.com, or reach out to me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn. And I love to get some feedback. Tell me what you love about the show. Tell me what is not so good, because we all want to improve and I want you to have the best experience. Perhaps you also want to be on the show, or you know someone else that could be really fun to be interviewed by me. With that, thank you very much and have a great day. Oh, go sleeping now. It's time. Your eyes are heavy. See you then. Bye-bye.